Just as God commanded his son to be born through humble means, he often works through small, unexpected ways to fulfill his promises to us. That's what your young children, grandchildren, and godchildren will learn in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, O Bethlehem. This arch book would make a great Christmas gift for children ages 5 through 9. O Bethlehem is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. O Bethlehem.
KJazz Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of church history scholars as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers.
That's an excerpt from a promotional video of the Joseph Smith Papers Project. It is an effort to publish the journals of the founder of Mormonism, Joseph Smith. A third volume has been published, chronicling from Joseph Smith's own account and from others who are recording it firsthand, the last year of Joseph Smith's life. Joining us to talk about this newly published journal about Joseph Smith in his final year, Bill McKeever, a regular guest, founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, and author of several books, including, in their own words, a collection of Mormon quotations and Mormonism 101. Bill, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, great to be with you. How are things going?
Very well. This latest volume of Joseph Smith's journals that cover roughly the last year of his life, they've just so recently come out, you haven't had opportunity to read them. But what would you expect to learn new about the founder of Mormonism?
You know, I don't really know if there's really a whole bunch to learn about Joseph Smith. Much of what we know about Joseph Smith has been released in other publications, such as the documentary History of the Church and things like that. Naturally, there's going to be some perhaps obscure things about Smith that might be really new, but I'll tell you, so far, Todd, a lot of the information that the church has been coming out with lately hasn't really, in my opinion, been all that earth-shaking. It's just that the church is now really admitting things that a lot of us who have studied this topic for most of our lives have really known all along. So I'm really not sure. I haven't seen this new volume, so I can't say for sure on it specifically. But I will say this, that a lot of the other information that's been coming out in these Gospel Topics essays and such has not really been all that new to us. Maybe to a lot of Latter-day Saints, who for most of their lives as Mormons have only read what we call faith-promoting material, they might find some of this shocking. In fact, I know some of them do, especially when it comes to the polygamy aspect of Joseph Smith. You'd be surprised how many Latter-day Saints had no idea that Joseph Smith had at least 33 plural wives, and the essay said as many as 40. So I guess I could say that was kind of shocking that they admitted to at least 40 wives. But I don't know. That's a great question. It'll be interesting to see what this new volume holds.
Tell us a little bit about this Joseph Smith Papers Project. What is it?
Well, it was supposed to give a firsthand account of the life and teachings and background and of the founder of the Mormon Church, which, of course, to a Latter-day Saint, is a very important topic because Mormons are led to believe that Joseph Smith was called of God to restore true Christianity back to the earth. Mormonism has had this doctrine virtually since the beginning that there was this great apostasy of the Christian faith, making it necessary for God to restore what he really wanted his people to believe and practice. And he does this by calling Joseph Smith Jr. as his latter-day prophet. So what Joseph Smith teaches, what Joseph Smith does, is very important to Latter-day Saints. And as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the material that most Mormons are probably familiar with would be aspects of his life that certainly shows Joseph Smith in a very positive light. Now, some of his actions, if you look in the writings of some Mormon historians that are a bit more candid than others, I would say like Richard L. Bushman, for instance, he admits to some things that some Mormons might find troubling, especially when it comes to the subject of polygamy and Joseph Smith marrying other women who were currently married to living men or polyandry. That certainly throws a lot of Mormons off, because there's certainly no evidence in any of Mormon scriptures or teachings that would ever support that kind of behavior. But he's very important because he restores the true doctrines, as Mormons understand it, of what they would call the ancient Christian faith or the primitive Christian faith. And because of this alleged apostasy, a lot of what you and myself and other professing Christians believe would really be a corrupted version of Christianity, especially when it comes to our view of God and what we believe regarding salvation and Scripture and the like.
Now, why is Joseph Smith himself, not just ideas, not just writings, but the man himself, important to Mormonism, not just to Mormons, but really to the entire structure that is Mormonism?
Well, I guess it goes back to where, if he was not, in fact, a true prophet of God, called and divinely appointed as and commissioned, as Joseph Fielding Smith, the 10th president of the church, said, then Mormonism really doesn't have a leg to stand on. It really goes back to Joseph Smith. You either have to believe that he was a true prophet of God, or the whole movement is admittedly false. And either he did have an encounter with God the Father and Jesus in the Sacred Grove in 1820, as the Mormon Church teaches its people, and he was also given gold plates by an angel who called himself Moroni. If those things aren't true, Mormon leaders have admitted as much. If those things are not true, then as Gordon B. Hinckley, the 15th president of the church, said, Mormonism, or the Mormon Church, is a terrible blasphemy. And that's an interesting word that he uses. He didn't just say it would be false. He did use the word sham and fraud, I think, in other quotes. But to say that Mormons would believe in a blasphemy if such an event as the First Vision did not take place, I found that to be striking, because it tells me that Hinckley at least realized how seriously different the Mormon view of God is from traditional Christian views.
One of the things that the reporting on the latest set of Joseph Smith journals says that Joseph Smith was occupying himself with in his final year was the establishment of certain temple practices that have become part and parcel of faithful Mormon practice. What is that talking about?
Yeah, I found the writing. That was Peggy Fletcher Stack who said that. She's a pretty popular writer up here in Salt Lake City. I did, and it seems like you took it the same way I did originally, and then I had to wonder, did she really mean it the way she wrote it? Because the temple rituals really began, as we understand them today, the endowment ceremony, as we understand it, really began about a month after Joseph Smith became a Mason in April of 1842. So that was really more than just the last year of Joseph Smith. Now, it's not to say that they weren't probably refining some of it as it went along, because the church is still refining and fine-tuning the temple ritual as we know it. But that really wasn't something that took place in just the last 12 months of Joseph Smith's life. It had already been there a little bit prior to that. The temple ceremony, before it became known among many Mormons as the endowment ceremony, really goes back to the Kirtland period, when the Mormon church was headquartered in Kirtland, Ohio. But then the temple served more as a meeting house and not a place for these special rituals where Mormons today go and learn various handshakes and passwords called tokens and keywords that they feel are necessary in order to get past what are described as angelic sentinels who are blocking the way to the celestial kingdom of God. The only way that you can get past these angelic sentinels is by knowing these various handshakes and passwords that they learn in the temple endowment ceremony. And some of the handshakes are very similar to Masonic handshakes. And this is the connection that you see between Masonry and the endowment ceremony. So I'm not quite sure if she meant it to sound like that was only something that was in the last year of Joseph Smith's life, or maybe she was just saying that was a part of something that was introduced later on that he was dealing with in the last year of his life. Maybe that's what she meant. I'm not sure. because a lot of the other controversies that she talks about in the first paragraph about the raging controversies among the faithful about preaching about sin, salvation, resurrection, and a multi-tiered heaven and human potential to become like God, that was really before the last year of Joseph Smith's life as well. So it could be that she just didn't word it that well.
So you mentioned something earlier that that there are many, many faithful Latter-day Saints who are largely ignorant of the details of Joseph Smith's life, the real nitty-gritty kind of recorded in real-time details.
Oh, I think so. And I know this by talking with Latter-day Saints, as many as I do. I do a lot of going out, especially to the Mormon Miracle Pageant every year down in Manti, Utah. I talk to hundreds of Mormons just in a two-week period, and it's amazing at how much Mormon history the Mormons are not aware of. And when I challenge them on some of these things, you can understand they look at me like I'm crazy, like I'm just making up horrible things about Joseph Smith just to make him look bad and to make my position look better. And I've often had to kid with Latter-day Saints. I say, look, I don't even have the imagination to make this stuff up. I just get it from your own material. You just have to know where to look. And surprisingly, Todd, a lot of this stuff is not that difficult to find. I mean, a lot of what we know about Joseph Smith, as I said earlier, can be found in the history of the church. And there's two histories of the church. One's known as the Documentary History of the Church, which is 7 volumes. And then B.H. Roberts, who was a 70 and a church historian in the early years of Mormonism, he came up with a 6-volume set known as the Comprehensive History of the Church. And surprisingly, there's a lot of good information just within those pages. Now, I would venture to say that many Latter-day Saints probably don't take the time to read this material, perhaps because they don't feel it's all that necessary, because they already have a testimony that what they believe is true. And what I mean by that, this testimony is a subjective feeling that many Latter-day Saints claim to have based on prayer, asking God if Joseph Smith was a true prophet and if what he taught was actually true, including the bringing forth of the Book of Mormon. So there isn't really many times a lot of in-depth study, per se, on what Mormonism is all about. It's more about a subjective experience. And I find this to be the case most of the time, and many times, sadly, and it's kind of frightening, I'll have Latter-day Saints tell me it doesn't matter what evidence I produce, they know it's true because they prayed and God told them it was true. And of course, that's the question we as Christians need to focus on, because I'll challenge Latter-day Saints, how do you know it was God that told you this was true? And I sometimes use a question like this: do you as a Latter-day Saint believe that it honors God to believe something that is false? Most Mormons, they have to think about this, but then they'll eventually say no. Once I get them to say no, then I've got the conversation going in my direction. Because now if I can present something factual, maybe from their own material, that bothers them, I challenge them to look this up and then remember what you said, because what you're claiming to believe is not what the reality is telling us. And if you don't believe it honors God to believe something that is false, then you're going to have to make a course correction. And so I'm kind of putting the ball in their court to check these things out further after our conversation comes to an end.
Finally, then, if a faithful Mormon sat down and read the 3 volumes of these journals from the last days of Joseph Smith, what would, not including, of course, this last one that has just come out, would their view, their kind of polished, romanticized view of the founder of Mormonism, be significantly changed?
Perhaps, but I think that if a Mormon was to sit down and actually look at them, they would probably, and this might sound a little odd, they would probably be less apt to abandon their Mormonism if they saw that their church was being honest about this. We find that a lot of Latter-day Saints are really shaken up when they find out about some of this history from outside sources. And that seems to be across the board. And I know this because I go on to Mormon blog sites and I listen to what they're saying among themselves. and how shocked they are to find out that people like myself and other Christians who have studied this for a long time, they get really shook up when they hear it from us. But if someone from their own church was to tell them about this, it seems to have a less shocking effect on them. Not that it has no effect, because I think it does, and we do certainly know of a lot of people who, because of the essays, have now left the Mormon church because of some of the things they found out about Joseph Smith and the history of Mormonism. But I do think it might change a lot of this, as you say, romanticized view that many Latter-day Saints have. And if that be the case, then I would certainly encourage them to read as much as they can from those sources. Check it out and look at it.
Bill McKeever is founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah. He's author of several books, including In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations, and Mormonism 101. You can find a link to both of these resources at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Bill, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you. You guys have a great Christmas.
When we come back, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us for our weekly series, Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be in Psalm 66. We'll start out with a similarity between this psalm and a story of Jesus healing a man who cannot see. Stay tuned. You can receive 50% off the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series during Logia's special Reformation sale. Books like The Church by Professor Kurt Marquardt, Christology, Law and Gospel and the Means of Grace, and Baptism by Dr. David Scare, and Eschatology by Dr. John Stevenson. Browse before you buy at logia.org. You'll even find essays by Issues, etc., regular guests for as low as $2. Logia's Reformation Sale, logia.org, logia.org.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. The Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd in Greenville, South Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Chatfield, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Napoleon, Ohio. First Lutheran, Lufkin, Texas. Concordia Lutheran, Sykeston, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Granite City, Illinois. Trinity Lutheran, Gladson, Alabama. And Lord of Life Lutheran, Chesterfield, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
The Faith, Once for All, Delivered to the Saints. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You might wonder, is it possible for my child with special needs to receive a rich classical Christian education? Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope answers yes. With the Simply Classical curriculum created by Cheryl and published by Memoria Press, there's no reason to withhold a beautiful education from any struggling student. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support, through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small-town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.